And greetings, welcome to The Dividing Line. It is Tuesday. It's actually, this is actually the scheduled time. I think we probably threw everybody off. No one would expect us to actually do this when we're supposed to do it. But here we are. And we should have pretty much regular schedule this week, and then not really so much next week. Because I leave Tuesday once again, starting to get to know the flight crew on that flight to Heathrow by name, flying to Heathrow, and then I'm trying to remember, have I sort of stayed over? I know I did one year because we did something with Unbelievable. I stayed there in London and had a day or two or something like that, then flew on to South Africa.
Yeah, but we'd planned for that. So we kind of worked that into the...
Well, I know, but the point is...
this time it's just like, shoot you through, you know?
The point is I had a little time to adjust rather than just do the nine time zone type thing and a good, right at 24 hours, 22 hours. Well, if you include all the time sitting on the runway, more like 24 hours of travel down to South Africa. My concern and my hope for prayer on the part of the regular listeners and supporters, we've got a lot of listeners who are not supporters, but supporters of the ministry, is the debate with Graham Codrington. I think I've been saying Conderly. It starts with C, Codrington. But anyway, the debate on homosexual issues. I'm not exactly certain what we're doing yet. Need to figure that out very quickly. I expressed concern because for a while we're just going to do homosexual marriage. We can't do homosexual marriage from a Christian perspective until you deal with homosexuality. And in reading Graham's materials, there's just so much that has to be challenged, just must be challenged. It's just pure revisionism, and it's some of the best revisionism out there, but that's still what it is. And it's a fundamental overthrow of the biblical perspective on law and morality and ethics and marriage and everything. So I'm not exactly sure what it's going to end up being, but hopefully it's going to be useful and helpful, because we can't get anybody here in the United States evidently to do it. And so the point is, that's the next night. I mean, I get in sometime on Thursday, maybe Thursday morning, maybe. I'm not certain. It's the next night. And I'll be honest with you, the first day you can sort of get it through. It's the second day that's the toughest. So 9 hour, nine time zone leap, and then that debate, I'm not going to be at my sharpest. It's just not possible. So I'm going to need to have some supernatural assistance, shall we say. So if you want to pray for that, and then we have some, I'll be at Antioch Bible Church, where I've been each time I've gone before, and then down to Durban, and the debates down in Durban with Yusuf Ismail and Ayub Karim, and exciting stuff going on in South Africa. Still need your assistance to help make all that happen, but that starts next Tuesday. So might I be able to sneak a program in on Tuesday? All depends on how packing has gone and everything else. Not likely, but, we'll see. We'll see if things go smoothly. I mean, I haven't even bothered putting my bags on last trip. Just throw a few more things in. I've already washed everything. Just stick with what I got, I guess. It worked for Zurich and Kiev. Maybe it'll work for South Africa, too. It's going to be hot in Johannesburg, up to about 90-something. And then Durban won't be as warm. But looking forward to seeing everybody down there. And your prayers for that time, very, very much appreciated. as we are heading down to South Africa, and this will be the third year we've had this great privilege to be able to do that. On the 28th, which this actually says, I don't know, there's two dates here. One's 27th. I guess it was posted on the 27th, and it's the program for 28th. Sometime last week, I began seeing on my Facebook feed a series of comments from people about the Pope. Now, of course, there's all sorts of stuff going on about the Pope. All sorts of discussion of things he was saying and the incessant promotion of socialism and things like that. He very clearly is a socialist. But the thing that came up was the statement that the Pope said the cross was a failure, humanly speaking. And I saw that, and I went, what do you think he's saying? Because I know a little something about Roman Catholic theology. Gone around the block a few times with a few Roman Catholic apologists over the years, written a few books on the subject. And I know how the Pope speaks, how the papacy speaks in general. I know what Roman Catholicism teaches. I have criticized it for its... My very first book was on this. It was called The Fatal Flaw, for crying out loud. It came out in 1990. So what are we up to now? 25 years of criticizing Rome on this very subject. But Rome doesn't say the cross was a failure. I mean, because of the Mass, because of the Eucharistic sacrifice, because of the concept of the idea that the Eucharistic sacrifice is limited in its effect, because the whole sacramental system and the doling out of God's grace and the controlling of God's grace. I mean, it's all a blasphemy against the finished work of Christ. And the point is we have to make that point properly and biblically. And a lot of our Arminian friends struggle, for example, to give, I think, the strongest biblical refutation of the concept of the Eucharistic sacrifice, because they don't have a clear, consistent biblical doctrine of atonement to begin with. When you look at if you're a synergist and you look at Hebrews 9 and 10, and Christ enters into the heavenly place having obtained eternal redemption, if you're a synergist, well, attained the possibility of eternal redemption, but not really having obtained it, because as long as you're a universal atonement proponent, all Christ does is make men savable. He doesn't actually save them. So the synergistic Arminian has collapsed on the central issues to begin with. And as such, I really believe that Reformed theology provides the consistent, only consistent, biblical, strongest critique of the Roman Catholic system. I was certainly thinking about that a lot as I was teaching through that section again in Zurich just week before last, just how awesome that material is there in Hebrews, well, really 7 through 10, that whole section, the epipax, hapax, the once for all, sacrifice. It's beautiful. And I think that Reformed theology properly understands that, makes application of it, and hence can make a very, very strong criticism of the Roman Catholic position, which I've been trying to do now for a quarter of a century, beginning in those first debates in August of 1990. This has been over a quarter of a century. With Jerry Matatix. Back then, yes, Catholic Answers, he was with you. Just thought I'd remind you of that. Anyway, so once I finally got a chance to listen to what was said, I was just like, this statement is a non-issue. It's searching for something, and if you have to look for something to criticize the papacy, I don't know if you've done your homework. I mean, there's plenty of stuff there. I mean, you know, Francis is going around and he's celebrating Mass and he's giving indulgences and so on. There's plenty there. We don't need to be making stuff up. We don't need to be going to stuff that really isn't an issue, that can be plainly and easily understood in a way that, because Rome doesn't go around saying, well, the cross is a failure. Yeah, Jesus wanted to do something else and just blew it. That's not what they say. They say it was a success, that it did what God intended it to do. The problem is that it doesn't actually perfect anybody. That's the issue. And in fact, if you miss that, if you go after this other statement he made, you are distracting from the real issue. You're missing the point. You're giving the other side ammunition. You are working against yourself. It's just, so what I did is I posted something on Facebook. It was fairly short. It was fairly short. But I basically said, come on, people, there's plenty to criticize this guy for. You don't need to be making stuff up to criticize the guy. Well, after I posted that, in Twitter, I saw somebody asking J.D. Hall if what J.D. had just said was aimed at me. And so I had to go click on this and then see what it's in response to and so on and so forth. And that's when I eventually found the link to an article that was posted by Pulpit and Pen on the subject of this statement. And in essence saying, see, the Pope says the cross is a failure. He just proves he's the Antichrist and so on and so forth. And I'm like, so since there were people actually defending this understanding, I took the time to write a second, longer thing on Facebook, basically saying, come on, people, look at what Rome teaches, try to understand the concept of Eucharistic sacrifice. There's a way to understand this that is far more fair, and it just seems like for some people, being fair to a false teacher is irrelevant. And I'm like, wait a minute, we're Christians. It doesn't matter if it's a false teacher. He's not too fair. That's just simple truthfulness. That's just being honest with the material. But for a lot of folks, no. That's, you're for some folks, it's frightening. Some folks seem to think that if you call for, demand fairness in handling the claims and teachings of a false teacher, you yourself are compromising. To which I just go, where did you get your definition of truthfulness? We have to, that there are all sorts of effective apologetic arguments that I can never utilize because I would be compromising my commitment to Christian truth to utilize them. They may be very effective. They may have a great emotional impact upon somebody. Someone might be making hay with those arguments over in such and such a place, but it's still simply not an option for a Christian believer if we have the proper commitments to the issue of truthfulness, integrity. If we claim to be following him who is the truth, we have to bend over backwards. Even if people don't do that to us. Even if people mistreat us. Even if people are constantly saying untruths about us and misinterpreting every word we ever said. And of course, that happens to me all the time. It happens to J.D. Hall all the time, too. And so, for me, I am especially sensitive to it because I experience it all the time. I have people constantly say, well, you said such and such. I said, what? Oh, right here, you said such and so. And I look at it and say, how could you possibly rip that out of that context and read into it whatever you jolly well want to read. I wasn't even talking about that. Yeah, but you said it. Okay. So, if I am going to say that's an improper thing to do, then I really, really have to labor to not do that to other people. I'm a human being. I've done it inadvertently against my own proper commitments. And so I wrote this thing and said, look, folks, and this time when I wrote the first one, didn't know anything about what JD had written, didn't know anything about the pulpit and pen thing. I think he assumed that I was talking about him. I wasn't, because I didn't know about it. Once I read it and wrote the second one, yeah, then I'm like, oh, no. Come on, guys. This is just not the way to do it. Well, I came into channel yesterday. We had a fairly lengthy conversation in channel about the subject. Didn't really get anywhere. I was providentially hindered from doing anything further about it yesterday for various reasons. And so I think it is helpful and will be useful to listen to what JD had to say, and I'm going to offer a correction, and I'm going to offer a different perspective. And I think that I'm being consistent. And some people might say, but you're defending the Pope. I'm defending the Pope in the sense that he was not uttering blasphemy at this particular point in time. Okay? He does lots of other times. I mean, other than his loopy liberalism and his socialism and stuff like that, I was the one last week talking about, hello, people, this man claims to be Holy Father, this man is an alter Christus, this man claims to be Vicar of Christ, he's giving indulgences, let's talk about what indulgences are, let's talk about the Thesaurus Meritorum. But you see, that takes reading lots of stuff, knowing lots about Roman Catholic theology and the sacramental system, and I get it, this is easier. You can play a soundbite and go, wow, listen to that. The Antichrist speaks. There are some really sharp Roman Catholic apologists. Now, most of them are in hiding right now, but that they are out there. They're feeling a little put upon, a little beat up, and a little, you know, tired of having to spin old Frankie every day, just about. But there are some sharp people out there. And I just have to notice that a lot of folks who are jumping on the bandwagon here don't have a lot of experience in dealing with these people. In fact, don't seem to have ever debated them at all. And so I offer correction as one who has about a quarter century experience dealing in this particular area and this particular subject and a few books under the belt, and just trying to say, you know what, we need to make sure that our criticisms are accurate, because there's some sharp people on the other side that will benefit greatly from inaccurate criticisms on this particular subject. So, let's take a listen to what J.D. had to say, and I'll respond to it.
Among his words were the following, and I'll just go ahead and play the clip for you.
And if at times our efforts and works seem to fail and not produce fruit, we need to remember that we are followers of Jesus Christ, and his life, humanly speaking, ended in failure, the failure of the cross.
Now, I would love to see the original, because, again, this is live translation, and got a lot of experience in that area, but let's just go with what's there. When I hear that, trying to listen to him within the context of Roman Catholic teaching, I hear him saying that we experience difficulties and trials and failures in this life. We follow Jesus Christ. Remember that his life ended in what was, humanly speaking, a failure, the death on the cross. And I go, okay, 1 Corinthians chapter 1, death of Jesus on the cross is considered foolishness to the world. It's a stumbling block to the Jews because they never expected the Messiah to suffer in such a way. The whole idea of dying on a cross is so reprehensible from the world's perspective. Humanly speaking, dying on a Roman cross is not the demonstration of the Messiah's ascendancy to power. I mean, this just, it seems rather obvious to me. This is not a papal encyclical. This is not a papal bull. It is an address being given. If you know anything about Roman Catholic theology, that means it's not official. It's not on the subject that we're even talking about here. It's actually said in passing. So there is no basis for making a mountain out of a molehill here. And when you do, all that time you're spending doing that is time you're not spending focusing upon the real issues in regards to the teachings of the papacy and things like that. All right? So, there you go. So let's go on.
And that's why we call you an antichrist. Right there. That does it. Well, the Post has...
Now, okay. Do I think the Pope's an antichrist? Well, he's not the antichrist. He is an antichrist. Because Antichristoi is found in 1 John in plural. A lot of people forget about that because they're more familiar with Hal Lindsey and Blood Moons than they are with the text of the New Testament. There are many antichrists, and anyone who teaches a gospel opposed to the true gospel is an antichrist. And so Roman Catholicism, Islam, Mormonism, Jehovah's Witnesses, all of that would be representative of a system that is anti-Christ. Christos, and if you're the head of that system, then you would be an anti-Christos, one of the anti-Christoi. But that would be the truth of the prophet of the Mormon Church too, or the head of the governing body of Jehovah's Witnesses, or whatever else. If you are promulgating a message that is specifically opposed to Christ, then you would fit there. Now, historically, there have been all sorts of understandings of what the Antichrist is. And, for example, Luther had a spiritual Antichrist and a physical Antichrist. The spiritual Antichrist was the Pope. The physical Antichrist was the Muslims. Okay. All right. Well, no one who doesn't want to get laughed at is going to suggest that in any way I am soft on the papacy. I mean, you know, I could bury any of that in so much documentation and debate that it just, you know, isn't even funny. But being opposed to the papacy does not give you the right to misrepresent the papacy. And even if you think the Pope is the Antichrist, your commitment to Christ demands truthfulness in what you state concerning even what the Antichrist says. Okay? That's my thesis. Do with it as you will.
1,000 shares, and anytime we get over 1,000 shares, or even 500 shares, we'll have some blowback and pushback from all different angles. That's just going to happen when you have a website that's as well read as the Pulpit and Pen. You know what? Let me get on my soapbox here for just a moment, because again, this entire show is kind of my soapbox. I want to know how they determine, you know, the top 20 Christian blogs. Because I've seen that 2 years in a row. We outrank 80% of them that are listed by Christianity Today or different organizations. We outrank 80% of them on Alexa. We have more, and I look at their analytics. It's usually a combination of Alexa ranking, Facebook shares. We beat 80% of them, still don't make it on the list. Maybe they don't consider us a Christian website. But whenever you have a website as well-read as Pulp and Pin is, and you know, you have a post with that many shares, you get pushback. It's going to happen. Here's what I wrote. Of course, for the Church of Rome, the cross is a failure. The crucifixion must be made again at every Mass, only effectual when combined with the works of men.
Now, I just stop. Of course, the Church of Rome, the cross is a failure. That's not what they say. That is a, an, a it is a critique that we can make once we lay the proper foundation in an understanding of the sacramental system of the Eucharistic sacrifice, and having established the proper intention of the atonement, the union of the elect with Christ. There's a lot of it. Fatal flaw. There's a chapter on it in the Roman Catholic Controversy. Maybe two chapters. Don't remember. That's been, 20 years now, too. But you can establish those things. But Rome does not say that. And the Pope said, humanly speaking. He did not say, we are saying this. He said, humanly speaking. So it's just plain as the nose on my face that this is not dealing with what the Pope intended to communicate at that point in time. We've already left that. We've already gone somewhere else. And I question the propriety and the wisdom of doing this. Why not take this time to read from Vatican II, to read from Trent, to read from Indulgentiarum Doctrina, something like that? I don't see where this is supposed to go, or is where it's supposed to be helpful.
The Bishop of Rome ended his homily with...
Oh, by the way, I am playing this at 1.2 again. I don't know why I keep telling people that, but just in case. Well, I guess, you know, with the Planned Parenthood stuff, these are edited videos! I sort of feel like, okay, I'm editing this. I'm playing it at 1.2.
Here's Magnificat saying, let us commend to Our Lady the work we have been entrusted to do. The Pope ended, in other words, with an appeal to a dead woman, our self-righteous works. And for this, beloved, it is Catholicism in a nutshell. But for we Protestants, let us end with this. Lift high the cross. The love of Christ proclaim till all the world adore his sacred name. Come, brethren, follow where our captain trod, our King victorious, Christ the Son of God. Led on their way by this triumphant sign, the hosts of God in conquering ranks combine. That's simple, and as we saw the post increase, we had criticism. Some criticism came from a man that I very much respect, and that is James White. And it came from other corners. So let me stop here for a moment, and this is irrespective of James's criticism. First of all, let me say this.
Okay.
Any charge that pulpit and pen misrepresented the...
Okay. For some reason, it wouldn't stop. And I had to click someplace else, and now I have to figure out where we were. It's the first time this program has ever done that to me, but I kept hitting stop, and it wouldn't stop. My initial comments had nothing. I didn't know. I mean, this came out on Sunday. I think this happened on Saturday. I don't remember. Maybe on Sunday too. I don't remember. But my initial comments. Sorry, didn't have. I didn't know that JD had gotten involved with this particular criticism. Didn't know. I was just seeing stuff on my feed, made the comment, and then other people started making the connection. And so I came to it late. So let me see if I can find where we were.
A man in our church has recently stopped identifying with Christ.
Wow. Oh, I see what happened. It scrolled backwards. How did it do that? I have no earthly idea. I've never had that happen before.
Among his words were the following, and I'll just go ahead and play the clip for you.
Okay, now that's where we started. That's good. We're in the general neighborhood here.
So if someone wants to make the charge, that's out of context. That's not... If you look at the entire transcript, you'll see that... First of all, let me say this. Any charge that pulpit and led on their way by this triumphant sign, the hosts of God in conquering, irrespective of James's criticism...
Okay, should be right about here.
That's simple, and as we saw the post increase, we had criticism. Some criticism came from a man that I very much respect, and that is James White. And it came from other corners. So let me stop here for a moment, and this is irrespective of James's criticism. First of all, let me say this. Any charge that pulpit and pen misrepresented the Pope is preposterous.
Now, I'm a little concerned about this. Because you can play the clip, you can quote the words, but if you ignore the context, you're still misrepresenting it. I mean, there is a theology of Rome, there was a topic of the talk, And none of it is supportive of the reading that JD's giving it and many others gave it. It's just not supportive of it. I'm sorry. So you can quote all you want. You can still misrepresent someone even though you quoted them accurately. So I don't get that part. I am saying that if you are saying that it was the Pope's intention to communicate that the Roman Catholic Church's perspective is that Christ failed on the cross, that's not what the Pope said. And no fair reading of his words will ever give that to you. So you can quote all you want, but if you then run off and read all sorts of stuff into it that, and then you don't provide a substantiation for that in the immediate context and demonstrate from the talk, this is what he wanted to communicate, this was his intention, then you're still misrepresenting him.
We linked the entire transcript of his words. We posted his words then on video. Then we posted, not just a link, but the words pertinent to this quotation in transcript form on the website. If you look at the entire transcript, you'll see that he changed subjects. He was done speaking about the failure of the cross at that point. So there was absolutely no context that was there that we did not give. So let me say a couple things about that charge. First of all, it is impossible to take someone out of context when you provide the context and you provide every bit of context that was present.
That's not true. I'm sorry, that's just not true. You can quote the entirety of the context and then ignore it. You can read stuff into it, which is what's being done, which is what a number of people have done in this particular instance. You can say, I've got the entire book right here. Okay, but if you're not accurately representing what it says, what the intention of the author was, how many times have people held up one of my books and what they were saying was absolutely positively ridiculous? So I'm sorry, doesn't matter how often you quote it. If you're not accurately representing it, you can still misrepresent the thing. That's obvious.
So if someone wants to make the charge, that's out of context. That's out of context. Well, what context was absent from our presentation? In other words, what could we have added of the context to be free of the charge of taking it out of context?
Well, maybe some knowledge of Roman Catholic theology. Maybe something to demonstrate this is what he was talking about in the talk. Maybe something that would explain why, given that he's talking about our experience of failure and difficulty in this life, that that's not the context of humanly speaking. It just seems like such a long reach here. And there's no reason for this. There just isn't any reason to go here, given there's so much stuff already that we could be talking about and should be talking about, and almost nobody else was talking about, that to be spending time on this, it's a sort of a shame.
And the answer is nothing. We provided all of the context in his own words in three different ways for you to judge for yourself. If someone wants to claim misrepresentation, I would say how? And the answer is not that you misrepresented him, not that you changed his words around, not that you edited the video. No, only that you didn't come to the same conclusions in terms of what he meant, that the cross and Jesus is a failure in human terms, or humanly speaking, is the way that he phrased that. Humanly speaking, matter of fact, let me make sure I get that right. Humanly speaking, we're followers of Jesus Christ in his life, humanly speaking, ended in failure, the failure of the cross. Okay.
Yeah, we are saying that the conclusion you came to misrepresents the intention of the Pope, and that it is inappropriate to say that what the Pope intended to communicate was that the cross is, in the perspective of the Roman Catholic Church, speaking as the head of the Roman Catholic Church, a failure. I mean, that would be so, that would require such a massive context that's nowhere in this talk, that once again, simple concern for accuracy, honesty, and really getting to the main points. This is the issue. It seems that for a lot of folks in the discernment area today, they get fixated on certain things and just can't step back far enough to start getting the big context. And the big context in dealing with Roman Catholicism is focusing upon the nature of the gospel, the nature of the work of Christ. And that's not what he was talking about here. So why are we spending time on this? Well, I'm doing it because I was specifically mentioned on this program, and I think that it's necessary, even given the relationship that JD and I have had in the past, to just honestly air this and say, we disagree, here's why, and I think I'm right. And if JD thinks he's right, then let JD demonstrate that he knows more about Roman Catholicism than I do, and that there's something in the context here that all the rest of us have missed, but there isn't anything in the context here to provide sufficient basis for making the accusation that was made. Well, you're defending the papacy. No, I'm not. I'm defending simple honesty and argumentation. And as I said to JD in the chat channel yesterday, dude, you have been attacked falsely so many times on by this very methodology that you of all people should be the most sensitive to doing this in return. I've defended JD against some wild-eyed accusations that people have made. And you all know what that was all about, the Cantor situation. And so I just think if you're gonna demand that people be fair in their treatment of J.D. Hall, then J.D. Hall needs to be fair in his treatment of other people, whether it's the Pope or not. And that's I think, what really causes a lot of people problems. Well, it's the Pope, for crying out loud. Yeah, so? So what? You think that Paul felt it would have been correct for him to lie about the Judaizers, even though they're a false brother? Standard of truth. Standard of truth. We can't go there. We just can't go there.
Some would say, as they have, well, listen, that's a correct statement, because humanly speaking, it did end in failure. Well, listen, there's 37,000 views of this on YouTube. 37,000 views. A lot of people have seen it. If you look at the comments, a lot of people would take it the exact same way that we did.
That was the weakest comment of everything in this. Who cares? I mean, really? Argumentum ad populum? You're gonna appeal to YouTube comments? There is a reason that I don't even have YouTube comments. Because what have I called them? IIAs, Internet Ignorance Aggregators. How many people commenting on this have a scintilla of meaningful knowledge of Roman Catholic theology, including the Roman Catholics? Almost none. This is not a meaningful argument, and it needs to be withdrawn, and I would say apologized for, because this... Hey, have you ever seen how many people commented on that Arminian sermon? That means it must be right. Really? Okay. All right. Well, when I heard that one, I was like, hey. Filling airtime there, but you can't make it a meaningful argument.
which is, humanly speaking, is not a caveat that diminishes the rest of what he said. Now, when people say, that's not what he meant, though, I am not a stinking psychic. Believe it or not, I do not share the incommunicable attribute of God of omniscience. I don't know what was happening in his brain. I don't live in the Pope's brain. I assume that's where Satan hangs out, because he is the Antichrist. I don't hang out in his brain.
Well, okay. Some might possibly suggest this introduces an element of bias on your part. I mean, I just would ask you to reverse the roles there, and you might understand why I say that, but you're assuming you know, because he's the one who said, humanly speaking, in the human context. And unless you have something else in his teaching, where he has decided to overthrow the entirety of the Roman Catholic tradition on the subject of the cross, then you just don't have a basis for saying what you're saying. He was making a parallel in regards to how the world, humanly speaking, viewed the death of Christ. To expand it beyond that, there's no need to. There's never a need to. There never was. And now to say that somehow we have to engage in mind reading only demonstrates that we shouldn't have gone here in the first place. Nobody should have gone here in the first place. There wasn't any reason to. Case proven.
I can guess, but here's what I'm not going to do. I'm not going to assign to the Pope of Rome. Let me repeat. I'm not going to assign to the Pope of Rome orthodox motives in his theology, which would be a first time ever. When was the last time he was orthodox?
So, when the Pope says there is one true God, he doesn't really mean there's one true God. And when he says God exists as Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, he doesn't really mean he's Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. He actually believes in a quaternity because Mary needs to be put in there. And when he says that Jesus rose from death, he doesn't really... See the problem here? This is what happens when anti-Catholicism goes awry, goes too far, where it becomes, we don't have to worry about the accuracy of what we're saying about somebody because they're in this group. I don't believe that the Pope was even addressing an issue where we have disagreement. If he was talking about the efficacy of Roman Catholic sacraments, if he was talking about what the Roman Catholic Mass accomplishes, I sort of doubt this guy actually holds to a historically orthodox view from the Roman Catholic perspective of the Mass. I'll be perfectly honest with you, because I have a feeling he's minimally an inclusivist, and he could well be a universalist. But he's not talking about that. That's not what this is about. You can't squeeze this theological blood out of this rock because he's not talking about any of that stuff. That's the problem. There's not enough here to even begin going there. He's got all sorts of other... Why aren't we talking about statements that he's made other places? On other topics? We're not. We're talking about a statement that just simply did not say anything that was objectionable, but we've decided to throw it in there anyways, unfortunately.
Now, the chief complaint is, well, wasn't Jesus' death on the cross, wasn't it a failure, humanly speaking? I'm going to quote Dr. White here. The whole point of 1 Corinthians 1:18, that's the whole point of 1 Corinthians 1:18. Let me back up. Let me get the whole paragraph. His meaning was obvious, James says. It was not coded, it was not difficult to discern, even the slightest fairness on the part of any person listening would yield his intention. Okay, well, you may be smarter than me. Thank you for knowing what's going on in the Pope's head. And again, I'm so glad it's orthodox this time around.
KD, come on. That's ridiculous. I don't know what's going on in the Pope's head, but I know what he said, and I know what the context is about. And I can recognize when somebody is reaching. I can recognize when somebody is dealing with someone unfairly. And since you have been treated unfairly, you need to learn to do the same thing. Because if you don't, you don't have any basis to complain when somebody else then does the same thing to you. It's simple, even scales. And yeah, I've stood in large Roman Catholic churches and put this to practice. I've stood in mosques and demanded even scales. So I'm not a perfect man, and I'm not infallible, and I don't have the ability to read people's minds, but I can at least tell everybody we need to use the same standards for everyone. And in this case, you and many others didn't do that. You're using one standard for him that you would never accept if it was applied to you. And in fact, have not accepted when it has been applied to you. There's my argument. I think it's pretty straightforward. I think it's pretty clear.
He said that Jesus' death, from a human perspective, all caps, was a failure. And it was. That's the whole point of 1 Corinthians 1:18, isn't it? From a human perspective, Jesus' death at the hands of the Romans was the very definition of a quote-unquote failure. I've had to explain this over and over and over again to Muslims who reject the death of Christ for this very same reason. There simply was not anything in the statement as offered that was objectionable. Let me repeat that. There simply was not anything in the statement as offered that was objectionable. Nothing. It is a non-issue. Zip. Empty. And then a more or less a fair-minded, well-articulated rebuke of not arguing fairly, etc. So let's look at 1 Corinthians, if we should, or if we could. And we should. 1 Corinthians chapter 1, verse 18. I want to make sure that I don't take anything out of context and I don't say anything that is not there. Isn't that fair? And if we do that with the Pope, can we do that with the Scripture? For the message of the cross is foolishness to those who are perishing, but to us who are being saved, it is the power of God. Now, foolishness essentially means moronic. It's stupid. When someone who is not a believer hears the message of the cross, their attitude is, pfft. Doesn't that say a lot of words? I hate when people do that. They roll their eyes and go, pfft, pfft. Stupid. It's foolish. It's foolish to those who are perishing, but to us who are being saved, it's the power of God. Now, not to exegete, not to take anything out of context, not to misapply the meaning of Paul to the church in Corinth. At which point does Paul mention here, as James's proof text would say, or so he would assert, that the cross of Christ, and he put it in quotes, is a failure? I don't see.
Well, let me point that out to you, because obviously I was referring to this entire section. And if you identify the core teaching of the gospel, which is, of course, what halagos to staru is, as moria, as foolishness, then you are saying his death was non-redemptive, his death was empty, his death was foolish, and hence his death was a failure. I think everyone understands that. Even the Pope put it in that context. And it goes on, and of course I intended everyone to think of the whole section of this discussion in 1 Corinthians chapter 1. Goes on to talk about the reality that in the wisdom of God, the world through its wisdom did not come to know God. And that what the world calls foolishness is in fact, from God's perspective, wisdom. And he talks about the fact that for the Jews, when we preach Christ crucified, to the Jews, that's a stumbling block. Why? Because the death of Christ would be considered a failure to the Jews. Because the Messiah wasn't supposed to die. Anyone who dies upon a Roman cross is not succeeding. They have been defeated. They have been destroyed. They have been humiliated. The preaching of the cross is to them their perishing foolishness. It's a stumbling block to the Jews. It's foolishness to the Gentiles. But to those who are called, both Jews and Greeks, Christ, the power of God and the wisdom of God. And even the assertion in verse 25, for the weakness of God is stronger than men. What's the weakness of God? Well, it's that message about the crucified Messiah. But its strength is not found in the physical realm. It is found spiritually in what is accomplished therein. So I think my point was sort of obvious. And I think that the Pope's point was pretty obvious at the same time. That's why I said there wasn't anything really objectionable there. We are tilting at windmills. We don't have anything here that is really worthwhile, but
is a failure. I don't see quotation marks around the word failure or the word failure in 1 Corinthians 1:18. The Bible nowhere speaks of Christ's death and the cross as a failure. Perhaps it's stupidity, foolishness, we don't get it, it's kind of dumb, doesn't make sense. Not as a failure. That's the first thing I would say. If there's any taking something out of context, if there's anything that is misrepresentation, the only thing that's been misrepresented is this interpretation of 1 Corinthians 1:18.
So, I am guilty of misrepresenting 1 Corinthians 1:18 because I point out, as the Pope was pointing out, that the parallel he himself was making was that from humanly speaking, the cross was a failure. And because the word failure, the word, doesn't appear, then the concept's not there, and the humanly speaking part. I'm sorry. At this point, I was just going, now we're getting desperate. Seriously, JD? Come on. Is it possible that, you know, you might have just made a wrong statement, and it would be okay to go, all right. Doesn't seem that you're willing to do that.
Because foolishness may start with an F, and so does failure, but those words don't mean the same things.
I will allow that to stand as its own statement. I think I know that. You know, don't think it's relevant to the issue, but I think I know that.
Now, secondly, the second reason why I insist that this is not a non-issue. Nothing's there. Here's why I say that's not the case. When we see what the Pope meant in the illustration that he was trying to provide, we understand that he wasn't speaking in the hypothetical. His point was, listen, we as Christians sometimes fail. To quote the Pope again, the cross shows us a different way of measuring success. Ours is to plant the seeds, God sees to the fruits of our labors. And by the way, of course, you know what he's talking about. He's been talking about environmentalism. He's been talking about taking care of immigrants, especially the illegal variety, social justice type, you know, the poor and so forth. And if at times our efforts and work seem to fail and not produce fruit, we need to remember that we are followers of Jesus Christ, and his life, humanly speaking, ended in failure, the failure of the cross. What the Pope is arguing is that it's all right if our work seem as a failure because Jesus Christ and his life, humanly speaking, ended in failure, the failure of the cross. It wasn't as though the Pope is saying some people saw Christ's death in the cross as failure, but that indeed it was, at least humanly speaking, not speaking from a worldly perspective. Now, when Dr. Ryan says, listen...
Now, I just stop here and just go, what? I mean, really? It was difficult for me to even follow what was being said there. Because you're trying to get him to say something that he just didn't say. See, this is what happens when you try to load a passing statement with far more weight than the context will allow. It comes apart. He was making a passing statement about how Christian works. And if you want to talk about, well, Christian works for him or different Christian works for us. Irrelevant, people, come on. Get fair for a second. His point was that Christians, from a human perspective, often fail even when trying to do good deeds. But you know what? We follow Christ. We follow his example. And from the world's perspective, man, I'll tell you, standing up there on Calvary's Hill, he did not look like the model of success. We all understand that. That's why the Spirit of God has to be the one to make the message of the cross come alive in people's hearts. Because otherwise, foolishness. Absolute foolishness. And from the world's perspective, that dead body on the cross is failure. From our perspective, it's the very power of God. But the Pope wasn't talking about all the theological ramifications that people want to try to read into his statements. And if you can't see that, I don't know what to say to you. But I will tell you this. Whatever you do, don't go debate Roman Catholic apologists if this is how you argue. Please? Pretty please with sugar and honey on top? That's what my mom used to say. Because they will shred you. They will take you apart. They will make you look silly. Because they don't have your best interests in heart. You know, I do. They don't. So please don't take this into the debating realm with a Tim Staples or a Jimmy Akin or a Patrick Madrid or a Scott Hahn or any others that we can name, because they will make you pay for refusing to put a meaningful context around such statements. Besides that, Francis has given us a plethora of contextualized statements that we could be looking at. A plethora of odd things. Who am I to judge, he says. Well, this just wasn't one of them. This is just one that somebody decided to glom onto. And I don't think J.D. started this. I suppose I could be wrong. Suppose he was following, I guess he could have been following everything the Pope was saying. I sort of doubt it. Somebody else, I assume, glommed onto this and dumped a huge weight of theological argumentation on a statement that was never intended to communicate any of it. Any of it. And so here we sit, and we've spent the entire hour talking about it, and I hope that you understand why I did this. It's not because, well, I want to get into a fight with J.D. Hall. It's the last thing in the world I want to do. But consistency, consistency is the hallmark of truth. If inconsistency is a sign of a failed argument, then consistency is the hallmark of truth. And as Christians, we must fight against the temptation to drop that standard when we're dealing with people that we're absolutely convinced are in falsehood. We can't do that. Jesus didn't do that. We cannot follow after that way of thinking. It's simply absolutely impossible. And so the whole reason I've done this is not to defend Francis. No one who's watched this program could ever honestly say, I just think you're getting soft on the papacy. That's ridiculous. It's absurd. What I am saying is, when you pick on stuff that's irrelevant, when you pick on stuff that does not carry the water you think it carries, you actually diminish the meaningful arguments against the papacy. You make us all look bad. You make us all look bad. When bad arguments are put out there, then that diminishes from the force, the time of expression, and the force of the good arguments. That's what has caused me to invest this time in this. Is I am concerned that we remain focused upon the main things and the plain things and not get dragged off into stuff like this. Don't get dragged off into stuff like this. That's why I've taken the time to do this. I didn't know how long it would take, but it took up the whole hour. But again, trying to be consistent. Even when it's friends that are I'm having to disagree with, trying to be consistent. Been trying to do that on this program for a long time now. We'll keep trying to do it on Thursday, Lord willing. Hope to see you then. God bless.